the Labor, Industry, and Veterans and Military Affairs, Finance, and Policy Committee will come to order. I would like to announce that this meeting will take place in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This meeting may be viewed on the House Public Information TV, which is available on the House website. As is the custom of this committee, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we get started, our committee legislative assistant, Ms. Doyle, will take the roll.
Chair Eklund?
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang?
Present.
Representative Detmer?
Detmer, present.
Representative McDonald?
McDonald, present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bliss?
Present.
Representative Edelson? Representative Frederick?
Present.
Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Nelson?
Present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, present.
Representative Sundin?
Present.
Representative Edelson? And we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Doyle. Next on the agenda is approval of minutes from January 26, 2021 meeting. Every member should have received a copy of today's minutes in their inbox. Representative Frederick, did you get a chance to check over the minutes?
I did. I moved the minutes.
Representative Frederick moves approval of minutes from January 26, 2021. Any comments or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of the adoption of the minutes, say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Minutes are adopted. Members, the first bill on the agenda today is from Representative Dabney, House File 106. The chair will move that House File 106 be re-referred to the Workforce and Business Development Committee. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 106. Members may not be aware that Minnesota is the only state in the nation that reduces an otherwise eligible employee's unemployment insurance benefit if, in the previous year, during the base period that is used to establish their eligibility for unemployment insurance, they have applied for or received Social Security for the first time. This is either traditional Social Security old age benefit or Social Security disability benefit. What Minnesota does in that case is reduce the unemployment insurance payment by 50% of the Social Security payment. What this means for many Social Security recipients who are applying for unemployment is that they get little to no unemployment. Again, we're the only state in the nation that does this. If you look at what's happened with the state of seniors in our country, it's not what I refer to as my father's retirement. Many are working to make ends meet. While Social Security benefits may still be modest, we've got growing numbers of retirees who are seniors who are moving into retirement with mortgages, moving into retirement with student loan debt, moving into retirement with other debt, and are finding a need to work some or full time just having retired from their previous career. I believe that it's unfair and inappropriate to penalize them for this in the way Minnesota does, that we should repeal this provision as is envisioned in House File 106 and allow them to receive the benefits that they are otherwise eligible for. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Now I can talk. Thank you, Representative Dabney. Are there any questions, members, from House File 106? Members, this bill was, I don't see any, but I'll continue to watch the board. Members, this bill was inadvertently sent to this committee, and the subject of this bill does not typically fall under our jurisdiction. I do not expect that other bills that exclusively deal with unemployment insurance will be referred to this committee in the future. Are there any further questions or comments? Seeing no further questions or comments, I will renew my motion at House File 106.
Mr. Chair, then we do have a few hands up, yeah?
Oh, we do. Okay, I apologize, Mr. Reese. I see Representative Raleigh's got his hand up. Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the indulgence of the chair as I'm getting up to speed on how these work. I've got two questions, if I could, please. The first question is, how does this impact the UI fund? So I'll leave that as a first question, please, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney or possible Ms. Roberts may have an answer for that. Representative Dabney, I'll go to you first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Raleigh, good question. The employers who are employing these individuals who may have applied for Social Security in the previous year are assessed for the UI fund the same as if they were employing someone who is not eligible to apply for Social Security. So those employers are paying into the fund already.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you very much, Chair. The second question I've got is, and this might be a procedural question, Mr. Chair, so I'm not sure. Does this bill have a companion in the Senate that we can talk about or that has been sponsored?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, advocates are working on a couple of conversations with senators to carry the companion. I've got several who are interested in, and frankly, we're trying to figure out who gets picked first.
Got it.
Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Raleigh just asked my question with the Senate companion. So that was it.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney. You made a comment when asked how it was going to impact the UI fund, and you made a statement that they currently do take it, the withholding from the employee, but they don't currently pay it out, so it will impact the UI fund. Am I reading that right?
Representative Dabney.
So my understanding, and Representative Bliss, I think you may know that this is not a easy area of law to divine, but my understanding is it will affect the UI fund, of course, because people will be receiving benefits. But their employers are already paying in to cover those employees.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess what we're asking, how much will it impact the fund? Is there a note that says if this is passed, X amount of people that aren't receiving that 50% are going to, and it's going to negatively impact the fund? So is this going to then increase the rates that the employers have to pay on the UI fund?
Mr. Chair, so Representative Bliss, as you likely know, we don't get fiscal notes for proposals that do not affect the general fund. So, and Deed has not been able to provide us with data to better understand any possible impact on the fund.
Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any of the staff members there, nonpartisan or partisan staff, that may have an answer to this question?
Ms. Roberts, do you have anything that you can add to this?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't at this time, but there has been a fiscal note requested on this bill, and it is time to be completed for the next committee that has jurisdiction over this fund.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Representative Bliss.
And will that fiscal note have the Dolly numbers? Because Representative Dabney indicated that the fiscal notes don't. include anything that doesn't affect the general fund. I guess I'm concerned how it's going to affect the UI fund, not necessarily the general fund. And that was just a statement. And I have one more question for Representative Dabney. Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, you also indicated that we're the only state that doesn't allow or that takes 50% or any of the fund right now. Are there any states that currently don't allow double payments?
Representative Dabney. Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bliss, not to my knowledge, no. And just to flesh this out a little bit more, if you're eligible for unemployment and, eligible for Social Security and have been receiving it, and you're working and you get laid off and you have been receiving unemployment the entire past 12-month period, you experience no reduction in your unemployment insurance benefit. If, however, in the previous 12 months, only if you have applied for Social Security in the previous 12 months, even if you have not received any Social Security, do we reduce the rate, the amount of your unemployment benefit? So it should be impacting a relatively small amount of, small number of potential beneficiaries.
Representative Bliss. Representative Bliss, we may have lost you.
Sorry about that. I thought I was pushing my button, but I wasn't.
All right.
I heard somewhere that the state of Wisconsin doesn't allow the person to collect Social Security at the same time as unemployment. So that was my question. That's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bliss. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for Representative Dabney. Just it seems complicated in reading the bill and the summary. Does this put an extra burden? I mean, I imagine it puts an extra burden on employers.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I don't believe it does. I believe that they are already paying into the fund to cover these employees. It's the employees who are being burdened with only receiving half of their or experiencing their unemployment benefit being reduced. The employer doesn't receive a reduced assessment, to the best of my understanding, for employing someone who is eligible for Social Security.
Representative McDonald.
And Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Dabney. I do appreciate that, and certainly I'm sure the employees do. But if maybe staff could maybe further elaborate and maybe just agree with of Dabney, but it does seem that it'd be an extra burden on the employers. But if maybe staff could verify that, just would be good to know.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Is there anybody from nonpartisan staff that would be able to talk to this issue?
And not that I don't believe Representative Dabney. I just, just wanted to further investigate it.
Mr. Chair, this is Martha James from House Research.
Go ahead, Ms. James.
Mr. Chair and members, so the UI system is complicated, as we all know, in terms of how taxes are assessed. So there's two types of employers. There's tax-paying employers and reimbursing employers. A tax-paying employer is going to be charged. Some of these things are changed for 2021, just given to the COVID-19 situation, or will be. But in general, if you pay more unemployment to your employees, that can potentially impact your tax rate down the road. And then for a reimbursing employer, those employers receive a bill basically for unemployment that are paid to their employees. I'm not aware that there's a difference for Social Security payments. That's certainly something I can confirm, but my understanding would be that that would be something potentially that could be charged to the employee or employer. But Representative Dabney is correct that taxpaying employers are already paying this tax rate. And for 2021, there is not going to be any increase in the what's called the experience rating. So this wouldn't impact the experience rating for a taxpaying employer. It could potentially impact a reimbursing employer, is my understanding.
Thank you, Ms. James. Representative McDonald.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
Representative Edelson.
Hi, thank you, Sherry. I'm multitasking here with kids still doing schoolwork. I just want to thank, Chair, thank you. I want to thank Representative Dabney for bringing this bill. I think it feels like an oversight in my mind that we do this. And so I just want to thank you for advocating for seniors. It's really important, and I'm strongly supportive.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Are there any other questions or comments for the bill author or for staff?
Thank you for your time and consideration on this bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Seeing no further questions or comments, I will renew my motion that House File 106 be re-referred to the Workforce and Business Development, Finance, and Policy Committee. The legislative assistant will take the roll.
Ms. Doyle. Yeah.
Chair Eklund?
Yes.
Vice Chair Zhang?
Yes.
Representative Detmer?
Yes.
Representative McDonald?
Yes.
Representative Berg?
Yes.
Hello.
Representative Bliss?
Yes.
Representative Edelson?
Yes.
Representative Frederick?
Yes.
Representative Greenman?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Yes. Greenman, she's going to be good.
Representative Poston? Representative Poston?
Yes.
Representative Raleigh?
Yes.
Representative Sundin? Representative Sundin?
Yes.
That's 13 ayes.
Thank you, Ms. Doyle. You're on your way to your next committee, Representative Dabney. Members, I'd like to remind people that in this new world of Zoom, that when you're not speaking, to please mute yourself. It makes it a lot easier for hearing conversation or not hearing conversation. Next bill on our agenda is House File 104, which also belongs to Representative Dabney. I will move that House File 104 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. We also have an A1 author's amendment. Representative Dabney, would you like to explain the amendment first, or would you like to get the bill in the order and then discuss the bill as a whole as amended?
Mr. Chair, if you would please move the amendment and we can get the bill cleaned up. It's largely technical and was worked out with folks smarter than me.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. I will move adoption of the A1 amendment for House File 104. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? All opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Dabney, to your bill as amended.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Arguably the hardest hit group of Minnesotans during the COVID-19 pandemic economic downturn has been those that work in restaurants. Many of those workers rely on tips for part of their income when they can work. Those tips help pay the rent, put the food on the table, pay for the medicine, get the kids' shoes for school, go for all sorts of purposes. You tip in response to the service you receive from the server, the bartender, or the other worker. An obscure rule, however, in Minnesota allows employers to take some of that tip from the worker who earned it if the customer leaves that tip on a credit card. This rule allows the employer to charge a routine cost of their business, the interchange fee they pay to the credit card processor, against the employee's tip. Paying by credit card has become more common during the pandemic, when many businesses were asking customers not to pay in cash, but instead to pay by card to reduce the possibility of transferring the virus on paper money. House File 104 repeals this rule and allows the staff person who earned it to keep all the money they earned through their efforts. Mr. Chair, with me today is Mr. Wade Lunenberg from Unite Here Local 17.
Good afternoon, Chair Eklund, committee members. My name is Wade Lunenberg, and I'm with Unite Here Local 17, the hospitality union here in Minnesota. In law, tips are the sole property of the direct service employee. That is, in fact, a conflict in this situation and in the state's rules. Unite Here believes that debit and credit card fees are a cost of doing business. Our members and servers in general also know and rely on gratuities being the sole property of the server. Servers are paid only a minimum wage by their employer, and we believe the consumers largely understand that. So gratuities become a contract between the customer and the server for the service provided. There is an expectation from the customer that the server is getting the whole gratuity, whether delivered in cash or on a card. The server, a minimum wage earner, and the company's chief salesperson happens to be handling the physical transaction with the customer. Because the server has the bad luck of receiving a gratuity on a card, they're penalized. Nowhere else in the operation of a bar, restaurant, a sports venue, or an airport would a cook, a host, or a steward be assessed a credit card fee. I'll use my debit cards and credit cards a number of times this week to buy gas, groceries, or a trip to the dry cleaner. Each time, I must assume there may be a charge to the business for swiping that card, but I'll have confidence that they won't be able to assess a worker's earnings to pay for it. As consumers move more and more to plastic, there's no doubt that large industries like hospitality, retail, or personal services should be negotiating with the financial services industry for better terms on these credit transaction fees. This is a structural problem with the system and one to be sorted out by industry titans, not by the server who brought us dinner. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lundberg. And Representative Dabney, do you have any other testifiers?
No, I do not, Mr. Chair.
All right. With that, members, we'll open up to questions. Is there any member questions on this bill? Representative Raleigh.
Chair, thank you very much. I've got two, seems to be the key today. I've got two questions, if I could, please. So credit card fees are about 2 to 3% of the bill that's being charged. Do you think, or in House File 104, would this 2 to 3% fee that's paid by the employer count as income for the employee as it's being paid by the employer? Is there a hit to the tax side because it's being covered by the employer?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, none that I'm aware of, no.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The second question is, what is the tax implication or the financial implication should there be a chargeback where the employer has to get a hit from the credit card company due to a dispute? How is that rationalized back to the employer or the employee?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, I don't know how that would. I don't know the answer to that question. If I dispute a credit card transaction that included a tip.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Dabney, for bringing this bill. Over the past 11 months throughout this pandemic, I've worked with a great deal of restaurants throughout the state, and they have been struggling. They're operating at 50% capacity. Everybody's struggling, especially to your point, restaurant workers. So even here in our community in Edina, we started a specific fund because while businesses were receiving some aid, restaurant workers were completely laid off. And I'll tell you, the restaurant owners felt terrible about that. And so we had a program where we were able to help specific employees So I think this is an important conversation. I don't know that I 100% agree, and we've talked about this on this path, but have you thought about passing this fee off, the 2 or 3% off for the tip to the consumer? Because really, they're the ones that's benefiting from being able to use their plastic. I use my credit card all the time. I would be happy to pay if I'm getting that benefit, especially if I knew that that amount is being deducted from the server's tip. So, I mean, have you guys explored that at all?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edelson, I'm going to get out a little ahead of my skis here, but I believe there is state law that would prohibit that. You may have, there have been times when, for instance, gas stations have offered a discount if you pay in cash. They didn't have an upcharge if you pay by credit card. And I'm not remembering correctly or with certainty whether that's a function of state law or a function, as it's coming back to me now, a function of the contract they have with the credit card processor. And of course, to think about this a little further, if I go to Target and pay with a credit card, they don't charge me an upcharge for paying with the credit card, nor do they discount the cashier's wages if I pay by a credit card. It's only some restaurants who engage in this behavior.
Sam Edelson.
Chair Eklund, thank you, Chair Dabney. That's helpful. At Target, you're receiving a product, though. At, like, say, a salon, you're receiving a service, or say at a restaurant, you're receiving a service. I'm just wondering if there's, like, a way that, you know, there's a wellness fee that happens at a lot of restaurants that we're being charged now, because I think people, like, when they go out to eat, they do want to help and make sure that service workers are having a good living, but we also don't want restaurants to go away because we need those jobs. So I'm just wondering if there's, like, a middle ground here. So anyways, I do know if say a hairstylist pays the credit card fee when you leave the tip. Do you know typically at a salon, does that happen as well? Or say at a nail salon or a hair salon? I'm just curious. And then I'm done. Thank you.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edelson, you may recognize that hair salons are not my strong suit, but Ms. James may be able to help us here. Representative Raleigh's probably not his strong suit either, is my guess. but Ms. James may actually be able to help us here, because I believe that the only provision in state rule that allows for this is in the case of the service industry. The food service industry, and that it does not extend to things like hair or nail salons. But Ms. James may be able to help us there.
Ms. James, can you help us out here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney. So this is not my area of expertise, but I did just look on the revisor's website. There is a statute, Section 325G.051, that allows for surcharges on credit cards, and it indicates that a seller can impose a surcharge on a purchaser if basically they inform them at the time of the purchase and it doesn't exceed 5%. What I don't know if this is whether this statute would apply to this context, but I can certainly confirm that information and get back to you.
Thank you, Ms. James. Representative Edelson, anything else?
No, thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Dabney.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, just a comment, Mr. Chair. As a businessman sitting actually right next to a credit card machine where we swipe, I consider it as a pleasure and honor to be able to take and accept credit cards from my clients. Same thing when I do business at the restaurant. I consider it a great pleasure that they accept that, so I can maybe order a little bit bigger steak, maybe order a bigger photograph, if you will. So assessing that fee back to the customer would be very in the wrong direction completely. And if we ever go that direction, I'll fight for that doesn't happen. Not to mention, it seems like an administrative nightmare if hospitality industry and the restaurants have to give back, takes part of that portion of the credit card fee from the tip. So I certainly don't want to go in that direction. I support the bill. As far as the health impact fee that sometimes are at restaurants, I've seen those before, and I've requested them to, and I've heard from family members and friends that they won't pay that. And that's something that the usually the restaurant will take off then in that case. So I support the bill. Certainly we don't want to ever go in the direction that you were going to charge the, take that money out of, from the customer. So that's my 2 cents, and I'm sticking to it. That's my tip for the day, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative McDonald.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also support the bill, but just for background, the state of Minnesota, if you use a credit card or at a deputy register, if you use a credit card to buy your license plate tabs or do those type of transfers, because the state dictates in law, in statute, how much they have to charge, how much they have to give to the state. The state charges a surcharge if you want to use a credit card instead of paying by cash or paying with a check. So we already do that. And those fees can be, like I said, in some companies, depending on which credit card, they can be high. I know our local union, when they go over to that, because again, in their constitution, it requires how much the dues have to be. They also charge a fee if you pay by credit card as opposed to cash or a check. So, I mean, there's places where it's done.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Greenman.
Mr. Chair, really appreciate this conversation. I support the bill. One of the things I've been thinking about, and you may have said this before, but Representative Dabney or Mr. Lindenberg, is when we talk about these workers, what percentage of them are on minimum wage? And when I think one of the things, as I'm thinking about in Representative Adelson's comment, is I do think that it is on businesses to figure out how to pay for it. We shouldn't put that on minimum wage workers. And so somebody needs to bear the cost. And if it is the cost of doing business, I'm just wondering sort of who this impacts in terms of workers.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask Mr. Lindenberg to respond. He's more knowledgeable on this area than I.
Mr. Lindenberg, do you have a answer for that?
Well, and yes, and Chair, thank you. And Representative Greenman, I may defer to Ms. James, in fact, but it's my thought that anyone that, and hair care professionals, nail professionals, folks that receive tips on a credit card are also inclined to be part of this process and this occurrence.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Dabney, I see you still need a companion in the Senate, but one solution is to always tip in cash. I think the people that I know really appreciate the tip in cash, and you're saving not only the business money, because they're charged for the when we use our cards, but also I think the servers like the cash too. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Chair. This is just a strange, quick question with a statement, much like Representative McDonald's, that I feel like as a business owner, that's just sort of the cost of doing business. You offer a pay by credit card service, and that just kind of goes into how you run your business. So I'm in support of this bill. Quick question. I've been, you know, back in real life before COVID, I've been to coffee shops or other places of service, and the tip option is built in to when you're putting your credit card in and that whole business, and you actually can't complete your transaction until you choose the level of tip.
even opting out of one, and then you can sign your name and your transaction is complete. So how does this maybe address businesses who have gone to that format? Do we know if they've just chosen to not take that out of the employee's tip, or I guess I'm just asking, when leaving cash is not an option, is there provisions for that?
Representative Dabney, or possibly Mr. Lundberg.
I can respond briefly. This is inconsistent across the food service industry and events industry. So how it plays out in each individual situation is going to be each individual situation. Mr. Lundberg may have more.
Chair Eklund and Representative.
Mr. Lundberg.
Thank you. Representative Berg, it's my thought that this is an electronic transaction, and so the tip is being recorded as a piece of that transaction. And so if the operator, the coffee shop, restaurant, hotel is tracking or paying those fees, and then they have the ability to take a portion of that fee from the tips, would be my guess.
Thank you. Representative Berg.
Thank you. I appreciate that information. As a member of the service industry and having worked in such most of my life, I appreciate this bill. I fully support it, and thank you for your information.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, just quickly, I wondered if Representative Dabney would accept a oral amendment. If we really wanted to help the hospitality industry today, we could have an amendment drafted or an oral amendment that would not tax their tips. Currently in the state of Minnesota, we tax their tips. Perhaps would you consider an oral amendment to your bill that would their tips would be non-taxable?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, that's a tax committee question that I hadn't anticipated today. And I believe that's a matter of our conforming with federal law. So I would really like to avoid a trip to the tax committee with this bill.
Representative McDonald.
Representative Dabney, I'm on the tax committee. That's fine. And Representative Marquardt, he's wonderful. I did have that bill before, and I probably will have it again this year. But I appreciate your support, perhaps, in the future. And maybe we'll see you in tax court or a tax committee.
Yeah. Representative Poston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question. I just have a few statements. My company operates five restaurants and a catering business in the Brainerd Lakes area. And I just want to make a couple of points real quick. Our servers, with the exception of seasonal help, all make considerably more than the minimum wage, first of all. So the comment that was made about servers making minimum wage is not true, at least not in our case. We don't practice this where we charge back a server on a credit card bill. And we would never do that. It's too complicated and too time consuming, and our back office doesn't have time to do all of this work. And I'll say another thing about Representative Detmer said that the employees really like cash, and they really do. One of the reasons that they really like cash is they get cash the day that tip is given. And that's a big difference than when we have to process the credit card information and returns. So that's one of the big reasons that they appreciate that. In fact, if we have a catering event, which we hope to have some more soon, wedding receptions, et cetera, and we get a big cash tip for the crew, we dole that out at the end of that event. All cash gets doled out at all the restaurants at the end of the day. So that's the really, really important part of cash to them. It's not that 2 or 3% that someone might be charging them back. Again, we don't do that. So I just wanted to make those few comments. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Poston. Any other questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Seeing no further comments from the committee, any final comments from the author?
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the rich conversation. Thank you, Mr. Lunenberg, for coming here and testifying today. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity. I appreciate the time.
House File 104, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Next bill up on the agenda, House File 39, from Representative Carlson. I will move that House File 39 be re-referred to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. We do have an A1 author's amendment for us. Representative Carlson, would you like to describe the amendment, or would you have us adopt it first?
Mr. Chair, if you could adopt the amendment first to get the bill in the correct order, that would be appreciated.
I'll move adoption of the A1 amendment to get the bill in the way the author prefers. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The motion is, or the amendment is adopted. Representative Carlson, 2-year bill as amended.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. The purpose of House File 39 is to promote economic recovery in the state of Minnesota by requiring certain hospitality employers to rehire their workers laid off during the pandemic. House File 39 would require the covered employers to offer a worker laid off since January 31st, 2020, the option to return to their job by classification and seniority. To ensure the employee receives the offer, the employer must make the offer in writing, in mail, by mail, email, and text. There are also protections for workers if their employer's operation is sold or transferred. Covered employers are those who operate a hotel over 75 rooms, large event centers, building maintenance and security services, airport hospitality workers. The hospitality industry is a major employer in Minnesota, and its employees, many of whom are immigrants and people of color, have been especially hard hit by COVID-19. In April 2020, more than half of the hospitality workers in the metro area had lost their jobs, and recovery has been slow. By October 2020, employment in hospitality was still 30% less than it was a year earlier. Without policy action, workers who lost their jobs through no fault of their own could be left facing a challenging labor market already rife with racial disparities. Workers in the hospitality industry are disproportionately people of color. As a result, this population has borne the brunt of the massive layoffs that have occurred because of the pandemic. At hotels especially, laid off workers are nearly 90% people of color and 90% women. Ensuring the rights of these workers to return to their jobs that they held pre-pandemic, as business allows, is a critical issue for racial justice as our economy recovers from COVID-19. In addition to protecting workers, House File 39 helps achieve a key ingredient for the speed of the overall economic recovery, which is maintaining established employer-employee relationships. Research shows that established employer-employee relationships are critical to the speed of the overall recovery. So in conclusion, this common sense legislation will help stabilize an important part of the Minnesota economy as businesses and workers alike recover from the crisis of COVID-19. Mr. Chair, I do have several testifiers, and I believe there are others here to testify as well, but if Mr. Wade Lunenberg could go first.
Just a second, Representative Carlson. One of Ms. Lewis, I guess, is on a time crunch, so we will take her first. So Tara Lewis, SEIU Local 26, please identify yourself for the record and proceed. Ms.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yep, we have you, Ms. Lewis. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Tara Lewis, and I am an employee with the security company West. And I work for West, and I did... Let me restart. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tara Lewis, I work for WES, and I did event security at places like U.S. Bank, Allianz, TCF Bank, and other accounts around the city. I've done this job for over 3 years, and I'm a member of SEIU Local 26. I love interacting with the public and being part of these events, but COVID has resulted in the cancellation of all the events we'd usually work. I remember the day of March 8th of 2020 was the last day I worked an event, which was a Gophers basketball game, if I could recall correctly. On March 9th, events started disappearing from our system. First, it was just one, then multiple events, and then everything got canceled. I had to rely on unemployment since then, and it has been hard mentally facing this challenge. I've worked my whole life, and it is hard not to have a job to go to, and like everyone else, I've dealt with being isolated. I know some of my coworkers didn't have enough hours to be able to get unemployment, and they've struggled paying their bills. I've tried to help as many people as I can, but people are struggling. We also know that people of color have even more concerns about how we will get through this pandemic and worries about what will happen when we get back. Yet I'm still excited to get back to work as soon as it is safe. We know that nobody could have predicted that this pandemic would happen. It has been a learning experience for us all. It is out of our control, so it is important that when jobs open back up, workers shouldn't be punished by losing our jobs. This conversation shouldn't even be happening. If they didn't hire back their employees, it would be the companies taking advantage of this virus. It is only right to have this bill, HF 39, like this, that anyone who was laid off for the pandemic should get their jobs back when it is safe to work again. I am looking forward to when we can have big events again, hopefully someday soon. I hope you'll pass this bill, HF 39, so the event security staff like me can know the jobs we've done for years will be there when we get back to, when things start getting back to normal. Thank you, Chair and the committee, for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. If you could hang on, I know you have a time crunch, but if there's questions for you, if you have to go, we certainly understand that as well. Thank you for your testimony. Next up on the list, I have a Leona Williams. Ms. Williams, if you are here, could you please identify yourself for the record and proceed?
Hello, everyone. My name is Leona Williams. I work at the DoubleTree Downtown St. Paul in room service and as a host. I've been working at the DoubleTree since 2014. I've been laid off since March 16th of 2020 because of the COVID-19. The layoff has been really rough, guys. I have a partner that's finishing up school and looking for work in the hospital. We have 3 kids, one in middle school, one in high school, and one in elementary. I have been head of the household for a long time. Yes, this pandemic has been stressful. There was times where I was worried if the company was going to call me back or not. And I'm going through a really rough time as far as paying bills. Been thinking about downgrading my job if the company do not call me back. Been with them for 6 years. If you find a job that you like, where you can see yourself retiring, where you can see yourself being a part of something much more better and making a better place, where you can see yourself moving up, it means everything to know that you will be able to be there after the pandemic. It would mean everything to me to know that I would be able to return back to my job when business come back. I love to learn, be with people, talk to people, help people out. I have great work ethics. I've been working ever since I was 15 years old. It kills me inside to worry that if this pandemic is over and jobs will return, that I won't be able to come back. I love the community at the hotel that I work with. I love the people from all different cultures, from different countries. We work well together. We sort out situations together. Our group is very fun to work with. I love the travelers, the people that come in and out of town. And I love the families that come there. So I did call HR. I've been calling them for months now to see if there's any position for me. I'm willing to go back to work. And it would be a great honor if you guys can pass the bill of HF 35. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. Next up is Jamel Thomas. Jamel, could you please state your name for the record and proceed? Oh, there you go. Okay. Mr. Thomas, please proceed. I think we're having a little bit of technical difficulty here. It's showing that he's unmuted. Maybe we can work on that, and we'll ask Mr. Wade Lundberg from Unite here in Minnesota to testify, and we'll come back to Mr. Thomas. Mr. Lundberg. Mr. Reese, Mr. Committee Administrator, are we having some kind of technical difficulties here?
No, I see Mr. Lundberg on the list, but his camera or mic is both muted, so I don't know if he just stepped away from his computer or... Okay. Here we go.
My apologies.
Mr. Lundberg, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon again, Chair Eklund, committee members. Again, my name is Wade Lundberg. I'm the political director for Unite here, Local 17. We represent workers in the Twin Cities Convention Centers, major sports facilities, workers at MSP International Airport and in-flight catering and concessions, and in union hotels across the metro and Rochester. Today, I ask you to consider and pass this important piece of legislation on behalf of some of Minnesota's most vulnerable citizens and workers who lost their livelihoods through no fault of their own in this scourge of COVID-19. I can think of no industry of workers that has been more impacted by continued joblessness than these in hospitality since the onset of the pandemic. And that those jobs losses played out over just a period of days further left workers dismayed and hopeless from what were generally long-time careers in service to others that was equally damaging to them. 1 in 10 workers in Minnesota are in the wide-ranging sectors of hospitality, and nearly 120,000 workers initially lost their jobs, a 30% year-over-year drop in employment in the Twin Cities leisure and hospitality sector alone. And while there are parts of the industry, particularly the restaurant sector, that has a brighter future ahead, we continue to see chronic unemployment in our airport, accommodations, and event sectors with projections of a very long road to recovery stretching into 2023 and 24. Equally damaging to workers in the hotels and events work is the impact on women and our BIPOC communities. Most workers in this part of hospitality are a majority of women and people of color. And as we know, these same communities are also impacted at much higher rates in healthcare access, delivery, and worse outcomes in the pandemic. At Minnesota's largest hotel, 69% of regular full-time workers were furloughed in 2020 were people of color. At the largest airport concessions operator at MSP, 71% of those who lost their jobs since March of 2020 are Black or African American, and 2/3 of them are women. Without policy action, workers who lost their jobs could be left to face that challenging labor market that's filled with racial disparities, as Representative Carlson referenced. Here, as legislators, you're in receipt of a report demonstrating the incredible challenges faced by laid-off workers or separated workers in the industry. The intent of House File 39 is to secure a path back to work into jobs and careers and livelihoods that folks built for themselves and their families. It calls on employers and workers to follow an orderly process that brings back their incumbent workforce first, as business levels allow, before hiring new workers with less experience. There is no expectation that any given hotel or convention center will need all the workers back on a certain date. But again, as business levels allow, and knowing that recovery will be year over year. I've been in this industry for 33 years, and many of those as a banquet server. Hospitality has faced many challenges, recessions, 9/11, and a great recession, but nothing like this past year and this pandemic. What I do know is this industry and the people that work in it are incredibly resilient. They want to go back to the work they know and the livelihoods they built for themselves and their families. Today, we ask that you pass House File 39 that creates an orderly path back to work for these Minnesota citizens and to speed Minnesota's economic recovery. And I'll stand for any questions along with the representative. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lundberg. I'll check again here. Mr. Jamel Thomas, are you available to testify? If you are, please identify yourself for the record and proceed. We'll hold off again on Mr. Thomas. Next up is Mitch Killian, Associate Vice President, Metropolitan Airport Commission. Mr. Killian, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chairman Eklund and committee members. My name is Mitch Killian. I'm with the Airports Commission and do governmental affairs with them. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, Mr. Killian, we can hear you fine. Please proceed.
Thank you. And also with me is Cameron Boyd, our general counsel with the Airports Commission. In case you have any technical questions for me, we thought we'd have him on the line as well. So thanks a lot, and thanks for giving us the opportunity to say a few comments. I'm going to address specifically the airport kind of portion of the bill and just raise a couple of issues for you to think about. First of all, from the Airports Commission as an employer perspective, let me just say it has very little impact on us. You know, we have about 650 employees out here, operate a lot like a city, police, fire, field maintenance and things. We have not used layoff to get to our numbers. We've used natural attrition. We normally are well over 650 employees. We're well below 600 now. And so we haven't used layoff. So there's not a direct impact to us at this time. If we were to use layoff in the future, which right now we're able to get those numbers going down, just so you know, as a side note, the challenge with the airport is whether you have one airplane come in and go or 100, you still have to plow the runways, cut the grass, and do all those things. You need all the firemen and things, and also with heating and cooling and things for the airport. So it's been a real challenge for us out here. But if we were to lay off, we have collective bargaining agreements with our employees that have negotiated seniority and callback provisions. So as an employer, little impact on us at this time. But as you can imagine, there's many employees out here and employers that would be infected. The bill, we just want to make sure that you're aware that the Airports Commission has been addressing lots of these issues. And there's a specific section on the airport piece that we want to make sure that you understand that we have tackled over the last year many of these types of issues. Our board has done employee retention program. And policies that affect the employers and contractors and everybody out here, minimum wage provisions, project labor agreements, and labor peace. And we've been tackling a lot of them and updating them throughout the pandemic and over the last year. So we have been addressing these issues. They're very complex when it comes to the airport world. There are lots of things that you have to consider if you do decide to move ahead with this bill that we do. So I just want to make sure and have you understand some of the complexities of the airport side of this. First of all, we have over 20,000. I said we have, the Airports Commission has only 600 employees or less now. And there's over 20,000 employees out here that work at MSP alone. That's not counting our reliever airport system, which would add more. We have lots of large companies that hundreds and thousands of employees, like the airlines, but we have very small companies out here with just a few employees that maybe don't even have an HR department. So as we consider policies, I want you to think about these pieces. MAC has lots of construction companies that contract with us. And we have service providers that contract with us that policies affect them because they're on the airport regularly. And we have airlines, naturally, the restaurants, retailers. And those companies have construction companies that help them do build outs and things, but they also have service providers. Many of the companies out here that maybe do fueling or luggage handling or aircraft cleaning are service providers on the airport. And so these policies affect them differently. Naturally, we have surface transportation providers, the TNCs and Uber, Lyft, taxi cabs, rental car companies. And then on top of that, we have these kind of federally regulated pieces of those businesses. The ACDB program, which is the Airport Concessions Disadvantaged Business Enterprises. We have federal laws that actually guide us on how we can deal with them. The airlines operate underneath the Railway Labor Act, and other employers operate out under the National Labor Relations Act. So as we approach these policies out here, they are really complex, and we have been tackling them and moving ahead with lots of really challenging issues. I really want to point you in out these complexities of these airport pieces as you approach this bill. When we approach the issues at the airport here, we have to get all these stakeholders to the table, and it takes months of public hearings and things to kind of get all these different angles of all the different employers each time we kind of put one of these policies on the table. And today, I'm not sure that all the stakeholders have been called to the table here, both employee side and employer side. I think that there's some of our tenants that aren't even aware of these discussions yet going on, and I want to make sure that you're aware of that. But when we tackle them out here, we've had public hearings and meetings and things, and then we have a committee structure that we bring these through as well. And so we have been tackling them. We think we've been doing a pretty good job. I hope that you haven't been hearing too many complaints about the policies that we've been putting in place, but we have been moving forward. Happy to discuss if there are issues that we've been doing, but we have a pretty extensive program for these policies that we've been addressing because there's a lot of complexities out here. I'd like to just tell you about one nuance to try to give you a feeling for it. So last year, when we had to do rent relief for our concessionaires at the airport, we did that rent relief for them. You know, they're right now over 50% of our businesses, the concessionaires in the terminal building are closed. And so how can we charge them rent? I mean, they just don't have, we're still in the 30 and maybe on a high day, 40% of our normal passengers out here. And when your revenue is built on those passengers coming through and there's none, you know, how can we charge them rent? So we're doing rent relief programs with them. But when we did those rent relief programs last summer, we incorporated contingencies that the employers would have allowed an additional 60 days of healthcare benefits for their employees. So the employer benefit from the rent relief, and we expected them to pass it on to the employees as well. So we do nuances like that out here and have been addressing these things, and we want to make sure that the committee understands that we've been working on this and doing a lot of things, have a lot of good processes in place for developing the policies. And we didn't want this bill to overshadow the work we've been doing. So I want to make sure that you understand it. We're here to answer more questions if you have them, and we'll be following the bill as it goes through. But I think you're going to be hearing from more tenants, employees, and things as this moves forward. And our hearts and thoughts are with them, employees, the ones that testified today and the many employees out here that aren't here. And we want to see them back to work. And we've been working at it. We want to make sure the committee knows that. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, and we'll take questions if you have it.
Thank you, Ms. Killian. If you could hang, around, I got one more test fire, and then we'll go to questions. Mr. Thomas, we found a computer that works that can talk to us. So, Mr. Thomas, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Jamel Thomas. I'm a cook at the Marquette Hotel, and I've worked there since 2004. I've been laid off since March 17, 2020 because of the COVID-19. I love working at the Marquette. I started out as a dishwasher at the Marquette. Then I became a pantry cook. Then I started broilers, sautés, and fryers. I learned how to do it all. I was cooking for banquets, room service, and restaurants, and everything. Our coworkers were like family there. Some days I would start at 5 a.m., work my shift, and have to come back that same day or that evening and work until 10 p.m. I was willing to do it because it was a good job. I love the place. After the first couple of weeks of the layoff, it started wearing on me. The unemployment helped a little bit, but I've got bills piling up. I got a doctor bill when I didn't even know that my insurance had ran out. And all of a sudden, here comes this doctor bill, over $1,000. I'm not the only one that got medical bills almost without a warning. We got people here struggling, trying to survive. Sometimes driving home from work, driving home from doing errands for the family, I would drive past the Marquette Hotel just to see how it was holding up, what was going on. I see the curtains are closed, and I just shake my head thinking 17 years gone down the drain. I would be so happy, more than happy, if they would call me back to work. I want to retire from there. That was my plan when I started working there, is to retire from the Marquette Hotel. I will stand on my feet as long as I can work, you know. And working at the hotel has been my livelihood, my survival kit. Rain, sleet, nor snow, nothing could stop me from going to this job. I miss the place very dearly. I'm not going to lie. I have dreams about the place, honestly. Sometimes I wake up thinking I'm about to get ready to go to work, and then I realize, no, this is the COVID-19 season. It would feel like a knife in my back if they gave my job to someone else, and I have to look for another position in another company. Filling out an application, I'm 52 years old now, so the companies, they'll never see my face. So by seeing my age first, they probably deny me the work because of my age. But I'm in good shape for work, but I want to go back to the Marquette Hotel. And I talked to some of the other workers. We all want to go back. It's no one's fault that this COVID-19 happened. So I think we deserve to go back to our own jobs. And we're just asking to be sure for politicians to make sure that we can go back to our jobs eventually so we can get back to the way things were, or maybe even better than before. So if you can please pass the HF-39, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. And we have several members' questions here. I remind the committee that we are done at 4:30 sharp. So Representative McDonald, you're first up.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, just a message to the testifiers. Thank you for all that you have done, and just know that we will get back to normal. Sounds like, Mr. Jamel and the other testifiers, your dedication and your passion for your jobs, that I wouldn't be surprised at all that you would be rehired. As a photographer, an event photographer, I photographed many of the hotels and event centers, both behind the scenes and in front of the scenes, and got to know a lot of the personnel who works with the event centers and the hotels. And they are wonderful people, great workers. They're just wonderful to work with. So I get to see and work with, or did pre-COVID, a lot of you great employees that are dedicated to your excellence. And those who are dedicated to excellence, I'm sure that you guys will be rehired back. So hang in there and keep up the good work. I do have a question for the author, Representative Carlson, in regards to retention and collective bargaining. It sounds like MAC, through the testimony by Mr. Killian, they really have it together. They are taking care of their employees. They have every T, crossed and every I dotted. So Representative Carlson, doesn't collective bargaining and retention already is part of the contracts and the SEIU and other unions?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, yes, Representative McDonald. There's the work with the MAC is ongoing. Through some conversations leading up to this point, the complexities there, there are definitely some issues that need to be worked out. So that is one of them. Those conversations will continue. Want to thank Mr. Killian for his testimony today and kind of highlighting some of those things that we need to continue to work through. I would like to allow Mr. Nunberg to maybe even talk, say a few words about that as well in terms of some of the nuances in working with the MAC.
Thank you,
Mr. Nunberg.
Chair Eklund, committee. It's true. We have worked on a lot of initiatives together and in collaboration with the MAC Commission over the past couple of years, including a $15 minimum wage that's being realized in the next 18 months. We've also worked on labor provisions and retention to Mr. Killian's comments. And that has been a great collaboration and a successful working relationship for sure. And to the point around collective bargaining agreements and the complexities of the MAC itself, it's important to understand that the MAC administration has contracts of its own and has employees of its own. And then through contracting, like food concessions, they have contracts with the concessionaires, but as far as representation between an organization like Unite Here and a concessionaire, that's a collective bargaining agreement there. So there are lots of different kinds of relationships out there. It is true that in many CBAs, whether it's an SEIU CBA or a Unite Here CBA, we do have recall rights. And we do sometimes have the ability to extend those recall rights with those particular employers. But it's important to understand that there are many non-union workers out there who may not have any recall rights in the most severe circumstances like this pandemic.
Representative Carlson, McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, so there, that really wasn't an, I quite couldn't understand that explanation. The unions and the leaders and the SEIU, that collective bargaining should be already a part of it. You didn't really able to communicate that very effectively. MAC certainly is doing it right, but why is this bill even necessary if that's the case? And what does it do to at-will employment?
Well, Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, the bill is absolutely necessary. As you heard from our other testifiers working within the hospitality industry, those that are working within the hotels would greatly benefit from this legislation. The MAC, as and we probably use too many words to answer your first question, is complex. Mm-hmm. And maybe due to the complexities why we use so many words to describe that arrangement. What I can promise you is that the conversations with the MAC will continue so that I personally have a more thorough understanding of the implications of this legislation on the particular organization.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, your bill would force then union shops, those to hire non-union employees. Is that correct?
Representative Carlson.
I'm going to defer to Mr. Lundberg on that.
Mr. Lundberg.
Chair and representative, no, that is not that's not the case. When an employer hires a worker, they become part of the union. This does not force companies to hire non-union workers. They become part of the union by being employed with an employer that has a CBA.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, your bill has a lot of complexities and a lot of challenges. Do you know that Governor Newsom vetoed this very same bill? It doesn't work, and he vetoed it. What do you have to say about that?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, this legislation has been introduced in states and cities across the country with a great deal of success. Again, I'll refer to Mr. Lundberg in terms of highlighting some of those successes in other cities and states across the country.
Mr. Lundberg, and members, remember, we're running short on time here, so let's be brief.
Chair and Representative McDonald, it's true that we've passed these ordinances in Baltimore, Los Angeles, New Haven, Oakland, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., it's also being considered in state legislation in Massachusetts and Connecticut at this point.
And if I may also add, Mr. Chair, if I may also add.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative McDonald, please keep in mind, this legislation has a sunset. This is to deal specifically with the pandemic. The amendment that we adopted at the beginning of the hearing will require that this legislation expire December 31st, 2022. So this is to address a specific need.
Representative McDonald.
Okay, lastly, I know you want to move on. So, Representative Carlson, I do appreciate the bill and the passion and the hard work. We all want to get back to normalcy. We all want to get back to work. The testifiers are passionate, and it sounds like they'd be the first in line to get the job back. So I don't know if this bill will do that or necessary, but for those who are great at what they do and have a passion, they will be back. And I just think this is going in the wrong direction. That's all I have for now.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to wrap my head around the meaning or like the impact of this legislation. And my understanding is that it would impact both unionized and non-unionized individuals, and that those who were unionized probably had in their contract some sort of language that had recall provisions in it. And so there's already, or there at least were, agreements that employers agreed to regarding recall, the recall process. But some of those contracts might have had a 6-month time frame. And so this would simply, if not the same, similar language to the similar intent that the agreements that already were in place, but it was just extending the time frame of that. Would my understanding of that be correct?
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Frederick Berg. For a more succinct answer, I'm going to defer to Mr. Lunenberg again.
Mr. Lunenberg.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Frederick. I think you have a handle on what that looks like. The 6 to 12 months of coverage that may have been negotiated with an employer. I think it's important to remember that the larger part of the industry, workers are not covered by a collective bargaining agreement. And so, as a labor organization, we're here to work on behalf of our members and workers, but we're also here to raise standards and to carry those standards forward for our whole industry.
Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is literally my world. I've been a flight attendant for 17 years. When I am on, a trip, I stay in hotels, I talk to the staff. When I'm in the airport, I talk to the airport workers that work at the various stores and concessions. I've been in countless rooms with the MAC as we fought for 15 and a union. I want to say a little bit more about what Representative Frederick talked about, is that sometimes these CBAs take time. We're in negotiations. Maybe we haven't solidified the recall language in a CBA, and then we find ourselves in a situation like this, and our workers are protected. There is literally nothing more important than protecting our workers. If this pandemic hasn't shown us that our frontline workers that we haven't paid attention to, your store cashiers, your gas station cashiers, even those of us that take you on vacation and clean your rooms while you're on vacation, deserve protection, I'm not sure what else it takes to get people to pass a bill like this. I full on support it. Testifiers, I see you, and I thank you for your courage and your contribution. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Reverend Carlson, do you understand the whole concept that Minnesota is a at-will employee state?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, who's that?
Representative Detmer.
Representative Detmer, I'm sorry. Yes, I do.
Representative Detmer.
Could you share with the rest of the committee what is an at-will employment state?
Representative Carlson.
Again, out of respect for time and for succinctness, I think I'll refer to Mr. Lunenberg.
Rather than that, Representative Carlson, I'll see if Ms. James can comment on that.
Better yet.
Ms. James?
Mr. Chair and members, an at-will employment state means that an employee or an employer can end the employment relationship at any time. As long for a good reason, as long as it's not an illegal reason, that would be an at-will employment.
Thank you, Ms. James. Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair, just to finish that, is not illegal, such as discriminating based on race, creed, color, sex, national origin, ancestry, religion, age, disability, sexual orientation, and marital status. So basically what this bill is doing, it's getting rid of the at-will employment here in Minnesota.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, no, this bill is in light of the crisis we find ourselves as businesses begin to recover, that those that got those businesses there in the first place are part of that same recovery.
Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I think we forget that Governor Waltz has his executive orders that's shutting down all these businesses. And maybe it's about time that this executive power comes back to the legislature where it belongs. And we can start opening up these businesses like other states are doing. So I look at your bill and I don't think it's necessary. I think we just need to get these businesses back open. You know, if you look at we've lost 16,000 jobs this past year in the hospitality industry. And if you take a look at, there's about 1,000 hotels in Minnesota, possibly 600 of them won't ever open up again in the summer. So that's the issue that we should really be dealing with as a legislature. And so I'll just leave it as that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, just a few moments ago, you had stated that this bill has a sunset. I would ask to direct your attention to page 2, line 3.8, which is subdivision or subsection 12, declared emergency. And I'll read the first portion of it. It says declared emergency means a national security or peacetime emergency declared by the governor under section 12.31, a local emergency declared by the mayor of a municipality or the chair of a county board of commissioners under section 12.29, a federal public health emergency declared by the secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, or a major disaster or national emergency declared by the president. Does this mean that a tornado in downtown Minneapolis, which we experienced a number of years ago, would kick this law into effect because the word says a emergency, not the emergency, which you had testified a few moments ago that this bill has a sunset. And I'm wondering if this is an unintended clause or consequence of utilizing the language here, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, so you do have a copy of the amendments that was adopted at the beginning. That does include the sunset provision. You have that in front of you.
Okay, so
that was we amended the bill at the start of the hearing. So there is a sunset provision. To clarify, then there was another part of your question about tornadoes or something.
Representative Raleigh.
Yeah, thank you. No, it was, and I guess we didn't get into the amendment. We didn't ask questions on that. And I'm learning.
We go through the chair, members.
That's why I said I'm learning, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson. So we're all learning. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, and just to remind the committee that we did amend the bill at the beginning to bring it into the form that the author preferred. And I'll just quickly state that there's really two provisions within the amendment real quick here. Authorize workers to seek relief in district court where they can seek damages and attorney's fees. And then, of course, change the effective dates so that the bill sunsets on December 31st, 2022.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
So I did something to my screen here, folks. There we go. Representative Bliss, you had your, like I said, Representative Raleigh, we're all learning. Representative Bliss, you had your hand up earlier. Did you take it down?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh asked my question. Thank you.
Thank you, members. I don't see any other hands for questions. I'll ask any other questions to this bill, members. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't take up too much time. I just want to remind, you know, as somebody who's worked in an industry where seniority means everything, it's how you get your benefits, it's how you earn your vacation, and it's how you are the first person to come back to your job when something happens. Furloughs and layoffs are a part of life in the airline industry and across the hospitality industry. So I'd remind members of the committee that this is really protecting people who have been on the job through no fault of their own, have gotten laid off. So we're not setting precedent here. We're not, you know, changing anything about how union contracts are negotiated or why we need to bring up the definition of right to work. This is simply protecting what a worker has earned in times of need. And so just want to remind folks of that point, that the argument really doesn't need to go any further than that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Any other member comments? Seeing no further comments from the committee, any final comments, Representative Carlson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Berg summed it up very well. So I think we can end with that. Thank you all. Thank you to the testifiers. Thank you for taking time out of your day to be with us today. Hearing what you have gone through and what you are going through, I think has been really impactful. Can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. I will renew my motion that House File 39 be re-referred to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Ms. Doyle, please take the roll.
Lynn?
Yes.
Vice Chair Zhang?
Yes.
Representative Detmer?
No.
Representative McDonald?
No.
Representative Berg?
Yes.
Representative Bliss?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Yes.
Representative Frederick?
Yes.
Representative Greenman?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Raleigh?
No.
Representative Sundin?
Yes.
And there's 8 ayes, 5 nays.
Representative Carlson, you're on your way to judiciary. Thank you. Members and staff, our next meeting is February 2nd, 2021. Any other questions or comments before we adjourn? Seeing none, we'll see you next Tuesday. We are adjourned.